It's a rock and roll circus pressed onto two slabs of vinyl.
It was the makeup. It was the fire. It was just like, bam! Crazy!
All of a sudden, all hell broke loose.
Kiss Alive unleashed a thunderous blast of rebellion that turned four underground freaks into superheroes.
That's the album that broke everything wide open.
There were groupies in our beds, night and day.
By capturing the fiery communion of a band and fans, Alive became the first live masterpiece of rock.
That double live record changed the face of the music industry.
It was magic, man. It was like best party music in the world.
But now, after three decades of speculation, Kiss is finally revealing that Alive isn't entirely a live recording.
Most people assume it was all live. It wasn't.
Who cares if it was overdubbed? The energy still comes through.
Loud, daring, and unapologetically in your face.
Spit in the face of fashion. Spit in the face of whatever the rules are.
Kiss Alive is an ultimate album.
Only in America and only Kiss.
You wanted the best and you got it. The hottest band in the land, Kiss!
They are four rock and roll demons who possess their audience through the power of live performance.
Yeah, yeah. The ethic and ethos of Kiss is, whether you're playing for 100 people or to 100,000 people, play your hearts out. Give them everything. You drop a smile, we'll drive you
crazy. We come out with the big sledgehammer and lobotomize you.
The stage is full of blood and barbs and vomit, pieces of people.
People around the world, I want you to sing with us.
Betty, girls, men, crying, laughing, getting laid, taking off their clothes, drunk, stoned, not stoned. It's everything out there, and it's an event.
Unless you've seen Kiss Live, you don't understand the band.
In the fall of 75, Kiss Alive stormed America, searing all the phantasm and fury of the band's raucous stage show onto a double LP.
We wanted the fans to have the ultimate live album. We wanted them to have the ultimate live Kiss experience.
Everybody was talking the pyro and the bloody tongue and the outrage and the over-the-top performances, and that album captured it. No!
Makes you feel you're there, you're part of the concert, and you're part of this party that's going on.
Kiss Alive sounded like what a rock concert was supposed to sound like.
It was a symphony of rawness and rebellion fueled by a lot of testosterone. Everybody says she's looking good,
and the lady knows it's understood. Kiss Alive is this big, booming, straight on rock album, and it's makes you vibrate in your stomach.
I just thought it sounded amazing. And you put it on, it was like, you know, you were on stage in the living room.
Kiss Alive was an unexpected and unprecedented phenomenon. At the time, live albums were viewed as commercially toxic, and for a band without one hit to release a 75-minute collection of songs was considered career suicide.
You got nothing to lose!
In those days, live records were a signal of doom, and double live records simply didn't exist. The Beatles had never done it, the Rolling Stones had never done it, Jimi Hendrix had never done it.
But the monstrous success of Alive hoisted a giant middle finger at industry convention.
You got nothing to lose.
We were told we were crazy to attempt it, but at the same time, we were also told we were crazy to wear makeup and 8-inch heels and do what we were doing when the biggest acts around were the Carpenters and John Denver.
I mean, fashion has always been our enemy. We've completely ignored it from day one. I say this in the nicest way. Whatever's in fashion right now can kiss my ass.
You got nothing to lose.
That's what KISS has always been about, is saying that you don't have to follow anyone else's rules. Nothing should ever get in the way of what you believe in.
KISS Alive is an audacious testament to a band that was born out of contempt. When they came together in New York in December of 1972, Gene Simmons, Paul Stanley, Peter Criss, and Ace Frehley had little in common other than the desire to drive a stake through the heart of the hippie era.
We didn't quite know what we did want, but we knew we didn't want to look like a San Francisco band, fat and hairy, like mountain climbers. We didn't want to go rock goes lumberjacking.
I'm sorry to have taken so long. It must have been a bitch while I'm gone.
I had no interest in seeing some band that was tripping on acid and had a light show behind it because they were all so ugly or all so disheveled that you didn't want to look at them. That wasn't my idea of a rock experience.
We knew we wanted to be stars, and that meant you had to dress like stars and walk like stars, even if you had to reinvent yourself.
Drawing inspiration from Marvel Comics, England's glam movement, and New York's glitter scene, KISS envisioned themselves as your mother's worst nightmare, in tights.
We had this dream of putting together the band you could actually hate, but have to admit, it's the best show I've ever seen in my life. And we decided to put on makeup.
What we did was take our personalities and who we are and make them larger than life.
Oh, yeah. Gene is the ultimate demon. The guy is the ultimate horror fan. Paul is truly the star child. He is the star of the stage. Ace is truly the spaceman. And I am the catman. That's who we really are.
In the beginning, when we first put the makeup on, obviously, it was either lambasted, it was laughed at. But the truth is, if you believe in what you're doing, it's just a matter of time before other people will believe in what you're doing.
The band found its first true believer in a television producer named Bill Acoin. He signed on to manage KISS in the fall of 1973 and started videotaping their rehearsals to hone their theatrics.
We'd come up with ideas, but we didn't know whether anyone had done them or not done them or anything. We just wanted to do them.
Bill would put them in front of a bank of video cameras, not one. I mean, I'm talking 5, 6, 10 video cameras all over the rehearsal studios.
No band was doing this. We would finish rehearsal, we'd all sit down like a football team, look at this stuff.
Our stage movements began to be a bit choreographed, and all of a sudden, boom, the entire band moved and all the gears meshed.
Everybody else is here watching us!
Before they even had a record deal, the band was engineering a state-of-the-art live show that would leave their audiences awestruck.
The KISS show was initially designed purposely to grab the audience by the balls as early on as possible. Before the band says the first word, the explosion just kick you in the ass.
Make no mistake about it, what we do is provide a soundtrack for our visuals.
KISS would leave no stone unturned in the creation of their sonic spectacle, regardless of the danger.
That first time, spitting fire was, you know, just mind-numbing.
Get the fire out!
I step out and do it, and at the end, I saw everybody jump to their feet and they're screaming their heads off. What I didn't realize was at that point, half of my head was on fire, but they were just getting off on the idea that I was willing to kill myself.
The flames, smoke, and heavy metal wattage of the stage show stoked a hedonistic celebration of the band's singularly carnal songs.
We wrote about what we knew. We knew about chicks, sex, and having fun. I mean, we didn't know much else other than getting laid and partying.
The band signed to the upstart label Casablanca Records, and released their first album in February of 1974. And oh, it doesn't matter what you wanna do, it doesn't matter where you wanna go. But radio treated Kiss like a bad joke.
I had a lot of trouble getting an airplay, not so much because of the music, which admittedly was not great, but the makeup just turned people off before they ever even put that record on the turntable. They wouldn't even take it out of the jacket.
Looks like Muskrat Love.
Radio was playing pop at the time. I mean, Captain Tennille probably was the biggest selling record in 1975. Elton John ruled the charts. Fleetwood Mac were huge. I mean, people who had songs, who had choruses, and this is a band that didn't fit into that mold.
We didn't pander to that fantasy of what rock and roll was about at the time. If you really take a look at the first lyric, Nothing to Lose, I tried the back door. It was about anal love. The lyric went, before I had a baby, I tried every way. She didn't want to do it. But she did anyway, yeah, yeah. I don't think radio was going to play that one. You know you got nothing to lose. But what poetry? You got
nothing to lose. The critics' reaction to the group was immediate and hostile. They were panned as crass and disgusting, their music worthless. But they found vindication on the road. Kiss toured the heartland, probing every dark, overlooked corner of the nation, building a loyal legion of followers.
Certainly built up a grassroots following by playing places that most other bands thought were beneath them.
We would come out and people would just like, nobody knew who we were, and they would just say, what the f*** is this all about? But always by the end of the night, we'd win the audience over because they could see that whatever we were doing was sincere.
But that sincerity was not selling records. Kiss released three unsuccessful albums over 13 months. On vinyl, their songs simply couldn't match the power, attitude, and passion of their live act.
I think we were all dismayed to listen to things coming out of the speakers, and they just didn't sound like what we thought of ourselves as.
We couldn't grab that live feeling we had when we got up there in front of people. It was just something we noticed that when we played live, we'd get this amazing reaction, and the record sales, we'd go, why aren't they selling?
Kiss had an amazing live show, but it just never translated onto vinyl. That energy never translated onto the grooves.
Kiss loves you, rock and roll!
Coming up next, desperation leads to musical innovation.
The pressure was on from the record company. Yeah, you guys got to really give us something now.
Well, we said, well, let's release a live record as our souvenir. And if it doesn't happen, it won't cost us a lot.
When Ultimate Albums continues. They were condemned by critics and ostracized by radio. But by early 75, Kiss was unquestionably the most hypnotic live act in rock. Their shows had evolved into adrenalized exercises and deviance, the likes of which had never been seen. Not standing here. Not quite
away. No one had pyro every show. No one had levitating drums and fog machines and some maniac blowing flames every show.
Do you believe in rock and roll?
As an opening act, Kiss had a nasty habit of whipping the crowd into an insane frenzy that was impossible for headliners to follow.
Come on and clap your hands!
It was very difficult to have Kiss open for a band. Once they did, nobody wanted them to do it again.
The word had spread about this new band that blew everything up and stole their audiences.
Do you feel around?
There were instances when the headline act actually opted to go on before Kiss and let Kiss close the show because they knew there was no way to follow that band.
Do you feel all right?
But the packed arenas weren't translating into album sales. And the cost of the band's special effects-laden stage show had left them $250,000 in debt.
We were coming off three albums, which had done marginally well, although nowhere near what it took to keep a band of our magnitude on tour. We were spending far beyond what we were making.
To make matters worse, their record label Casablanca was on the verge of bankruptcy, unable to pay the band its meager royalties.
No one ever knew whether or not this was really going to be the last. You know, is this really the last gasp? This is either has to all come together or not.
Pressure was on from the record company, and you guys kind of really give us something now.
We don't have enough songs. Record company is running out of money. We weren't hitting. We were selling out all the concerts. People loved us live, but the studio records weren't happening, so why not do a live record?
In the early 70s, live records simply weren't done. But in typical Kiss fashion, the band defied convention and made plans to record their entire 75-minute live set.
The record industry thought we were out of our minds.
Obviously, when Kiss gets involved in something, it takes it over the top to a place that no other band can.
So not only did we decide to do a live record, but we decided to do a double live record.
To come out with a live kind of best of album of a band that never had a best of was kind of ballsy, we thought. But it was also the only choice we had since we didn't have any money left to pay them.
On May 16th, 1975, over 12,000 crazed teens packed into Detroit's Cobo Arena for the first of five shows to be recorded for the album.
Hey, how you doing? Oh, yeah. It looks like we're going to have ourselves a rock and roll party.
I remember the noise level was unbelievable. Fans are screaming, you can hear the band coming through the walls.
For producer Eddie Kramer, the intensity of the live show presented a technical nightmare.
Here's a big challenge. How the hell do you make a band like Kiss jump around on stage, flying up in the air, there's bombs going off and all this kind of crap, and how are you going to make that sound great on records?
In those days, I'd be taken over like I'd be possessed. And I'd make tons of mistakes on my bass. I remember talking backstage with the guys, and everybody agreed that we would jump around less, that we would try to hit the notes more.
You're under the gun, you're under the pressure, you gotta do it right that night, that moment, those screams. All that's going on is going on to the energy of the record.
The band played their hearts out. But the outcome was a rude awakening. Miscues that went unnoticed in a crowded arena were amplified 100 times over on tape.
There's no question that the guys thought, we'll have that live show, it'll be done, that'll be it, it'll be terrific. And of course, we went back and listened to it, and no one liked anything.
Everybody says he's looking good.
Anybody who thinks you can just mic a band and mic an audience and come out with something like that has a lot to learn.
The truth of the matter, after we did those four or five shows that we were putting live, we still didn't have it.
Coming up, the transformation of Alive and the admission that was a long time coming.
Most people assumed it was all live. It wasn't.
We wanted to bombard your senses as though you were immersed in the crowd. So to that end, we certainly added audience.
That just ruined it for me. They overdubbed the audience.
When Ultimate Albums continues. Kiss Alive was a landmark rock and roll achievement rooted in an act of desperation. By 1975, Kiss had released three albums that had been mocked by critics and ignored by radio.
Up until that point, we were quite well known as a live band. However, our album sales really didn't correlate with the kind of success we were having as a live band. It was at that point that we decided, let's do something that really reflects and captures what Kiss is.
With their label on the verge of bankruptcy, the band had one last chance to make good. So they scraped together their last pennies to record a live album.
I think they looked at Alive as their make or break album. That if something that recorded the energy of their live performance wasn't gonna break them, maybe nothing would.
You still got some energy left!
In the summer of 75, Kiss recorded a series of concerts in the hard rock strongholds of Davenport, Iowa, Wildwood, New Jersey, Cleveland, and Detroit.
Rock and roll, Detroit!
The band's performances were typically outrageous, but when they listened back to the recordings, Kiss discovered the frenzy and fury of their live show was a difficult thing to capture on tape.
The interesting thing is, when you're at a concert, you're not only listening with your ears, you're actually listening with your eyes. And when you take that element out of it, and you're only listening to an album, you're not quite as forgiving.
Rock and roll!
The Alive studio sessions would give birth to persistent debate over the integrity of the album as a live recording. For years, Kiss opted not to address rumors that significant portions of the album were overdubbed. Now, the band is finally setting the record straight.
Yeah, we touched up what we had to do, and I think it only made it better.
Most people assume it was all live. It wasn't. After the fact, you went into the studio, and sometimes you had to overdub a kick drum, or, you know, if the guitar was really out of tune, you had to redo it. If a harmony was out of tune, you had to redo that too.
Because as much as you want to retain the integrity of what you've done live, you also don't want to diminish it by having people hear guitars drop, wrong chords.
Come on, Paul.
Bum notes being sung.
I know a thing or two about her.
Well, there's a classic example of, you know, the Paul just running around, jumping up to the microphone. He's not on mic correctly, so this would be an opportunity for us to fix this in the studio.
When producer Eddie Kramer started mixing the album at New York's Electric Lady Studios in August of 75, he knew he'd captured some magical performances. But there were also troublesome glitches, like vocal mistakes on the track Black Diamond.
Ah, what do we got? Hang on, we might have something here. Let's see.
Ooh, Black Diamond!
Kramer had Paul Stanley re-record the vocals in the studio.
Ooh, Black Diamond!
Then he matched it seamlessly to the existing track.
Perfectly sung, with a lot of strength, conviction, you know, and it really sounds like it was done on the occasion. And I mean, I challenge anybody to make the distinction between what he sang in the studio and what he did live.
What we felt was essential was to capture the integrity of the performance, not necessarily having it note for note what actually happened. The impact of being there and the feeling that is given by that album was much more important.
All right. It's rock and roll all night and party every day.
In addition to fixing mistakes, the band wanted Eddie Kramer to boost the sound of the audience, creating a delirium that would occasionally overtake the music.
We wanted to bombard your senses as though you were immersed in the crowd. So to that end, we certainly added audience. Not that there wasn't a sold-out audience there screaming, but miking an audience where you can be in the midst of them is almost impossible.
This sounds like the audience to me. Left and right audience. They're great, but they're not big enough. We want them bigger.
So Kramer spliced together the best cheers, whistles, and applause from various KISS performances and overdubbed that amplified fanfare onto the musical tracks.
And here's the effect with it all in.
I can't believe that just ruined it for me. They overdubbed the audience.
Though purists reject the studio trickery as tampering with reality, to the band it was necessary in rendering the ultimate concert experience.
Who cares if it was overdubbed? Doesn't matter, you know. The energy still comes through with all the bombast and all the glory and all the craziness.
If you have a really ugly, out-of-tune mistake on the performance, but you can't go do it again because it costs you $1 million, that's perfectly legitimate to fix that moment.
You put a scratch on your leg, you put a Band-Aid on it. In essence, it still is a live record.
So it's anything but dishonest. You know, the reason it stands up to this day as a monumental live album is because it captures the live experience. If it feels like a live experience, it is a live experience.
Good night! Good night!
Coming up next, fans feast on Alive.
You couldn't walk into a toy store without finding KISS toys, comic books, anything you could imagine.
It was surreal. It was something out of a warped Norman Rockwell painting.
When Ultimate Albums continues. In August of 1975, KISS was convinced they had recorded the album that finally captured the full-throttle power of their sound. A live double LP called Alive.
It was magic, man. It was like, you know, we listened to that back, that was like, yeah, now that's it. That's what we were looking for. It was a party. It was an event.
But their sales projections were not overly optimistic.
Being that our first few albums sold somewhere between 50 and 90,000 copies each, I was hoping for 350,000. But let's not get our hopes up.
The Alive album cover featured four painted warriors caught in full battle cry. As an added incentive, the packaging included a photo-filled tour program and personal handwritten messages from each member of the band, a fan's dream come true.
You really got the feeling of being invested with this band when you, you know, opened that record and saw that for the first time. You know, I mean, you felt like it was your band, your album.
If you were a 10-year-old kid in 1975 and you saw this on the shelf, I mean, what wouldn't you like about it? This is like all your, you know, sort of cartoon and monster fantasies come to life, but they're playing guitars.
We've been tagged as marketing geniuses, but the truth is, the only thing we've ever been able to say we're good at is listening to our fans.
Come on and knock me!
The album's mix of horsepower, bravado, and gore would prove irresistible to hordes of impressionable young fans. Released on September 10th, 1975, Alive sent shockwaves through record stores.
Alive was pretty much an overnight success because the fans were ready for it. The fans really broke them. Radio didn't break them. The fans broke them.
They made a connection with their fans, and anybody who wasn't at the concert heard so much excitement from those who were at the concert that for every one ticket buyer, 20 of their friends heard about the excitement and the pyro, so they went out and bought the record. And that's how that worked.
Alive became gold, and within a month became platinum, and then double platinum, and then triple platinum.
So let's rock and roll all night and party every day!
Alive's initial success was spread entirely on word of mouth. And the unbelievable groundswell made an anthem out of a forgotten song.
When Alive came out, we noticed that Rock and Roll All Night, played live, had a different vibe than the studio record.
You show us everything you've got.
They it was that magic sound of the band and the fans in the same song.
The song had been written back in 1975, after the head of Casablanca Records challenged Kiss to come up with something he could sell to radio.
Neil Bogart actually walked in one day and said, what you guys need is an anthem, something that says something about the band, a lyric that connects the audience with the band.
I remember going back to the hotel, picking up my guitar and going, okay, what do we believe in? And going, I want to rock and roll all night and party every day. I want to rock and roll. I went simple, to the point.
And party every day.
And that's about summed up our philosophy. The idea is that every day above ground is a good day, and while we're here, we may as well enjoy it. Nighttime, too.
You show us everything you've got. When it was first released in 75, the studio version of the song failed to connect.
It barely made top 40.
But when its infectious message was married to the fans' response in concert, it became the most furious sing-along in rock history.
Rock and Roll All Night, recorded live, was what Kiss was about. What's Kiss without its fans? Nothing.
It's just one of those party songs that, you know, everybody gets up off their feet.
When it comes on the radio, you're psyched, you turn it up. You want to rock and roll all night and party every day. I mean, who doesn't, right?
Definitely good driving music. Definitely pedal to the metal. Shake your head and pound on the steering wheel music.
It's a party anthem, you know. Every time you hear it, it's a smile on your face.
Rock and roll all night, party every day, symbolizes exactly what the title suggests. It's just about being young and losing yourself in the moment.
Radio could no longer ignore Kiss Alive. By early 76, the band's dedicated army of followers were demanding respect and airplay.
It originated in Terre Haute, Indiana, when a big Kiss fan named Bill Starkey told his local radio station,
come on!
If you don't play Kiss by, you know, a designated hour, we will surround your studio. And no one took that seriously until thousands of people showed up and surrounded the radio station. When the people speak, the people are heard.
The Kiss Army would grow to monstrous proportions, their undying devotion propelling the band from the outer limits to the heights of superstardom.
It seemed like it happened overnight. They were a working band, and then they were superstars. Then there were Kiss lunchboxes and Kiss dolls. It just seemed to happen in the blink of an eye.
You couldn't walk into a toy store without finding Kiss toys, comic books. The dream was bigger than we ever imagined it.
They were my superheroes for years. I really believed Gene's like a monster, for real. I really believed that Peter Criss was raised by cats. I went to school with my face painted like all the time. Mom and Dad, see you later, my lunch money's going to Kiss.
Kiss Alive's eerie dominion over America's youth was captured on film October 9th, 1975, when the group descended on Cadillac, Michigan, a town clearly possessed.
There was a PR story that the football team was losing, and they started playing Kiss music in the locker room, and all of a sudden the team started winning.
They called us and asked if we would come to Cadillac, Michigan to participate in a celebration with them. Come along, share your time. We're given a ticker tape parade through the town. They named the main street Kiss Boulevard. And virtually everybody came out to celebrate.
I just want to say on behalf of Kiss, after getting the key to the city, I hope you never change the locks.
And the mayor and his wife was in Kiss makeup. The senator from the state was in Kiss makeup. The firemen and the policemen were in Kiss makeup.
Sometime, oh, sometime, I know you need a change of pace.
It was surreal. It was something out of a warped Norman Rockwell painting. And at the end of it, we went to the middle of the football field, waved to everybody, got into a waiting helicopter, took off. The helicopter banked. We threw all leaflets out and, wrote another page in Kistory. Only in America and only Kiss.
Coming up, the immortal impact of Alive.
Kiss loves you!
That double live record changed the face of the music industry.
When Ultimate Albums continues. Kiss Alive was a tour de force of sound and spectacle that instantly launched the band into superstardom.
That's the album that broke everything wide open.
It just happened to be the right time for that band with that style, those visuals.
You just couldn't help but be a Kiss fan in 1975. There's just no way around it.
Following its release in the fall of 75, Kiss Alive spent an astounding 2 years on the Billboard charts and sold 4 million copies.
To sell 4 million albums at that time would be like selling 20 million albums today. There were so many less record buyers, but it was a phenomenal whirlwind where all hell broke loose. Get the fire out!
Something was happening, and it was happening right in front of our eyes. There were groupies in our beds, night and day, more than we can physically handle. We become the new rock stars. Everybody was talking about Kiss.
The album's entirely unexpected success forever altered the way the industry viewed live recordings.
That double live record changed the face of the music industry. Then every band, once they reached a certain popularity, then their live record is part of their catalog.
People go in and go, I'll record an album like Kiss Alive. Guess what? A lot of them suck, because making something that is beautiful in its rawness and in its ugliness is not as easy as one might think.
Alive became the benchmark for every live album that followed in its wake. Its flawless communion of band and audience remains the ultimate sonic snapshot of the concert experience.
What made Kiss Alive and makes it to this day so unique is that it puts the listener in the audience.
I thought it was cool the way the audience, like, was so in it. I think that's what a concert feels like.
Detroit! Kiss loves you! Rock and roll!
It made you want to be there. And that's what any live album should do.
And it still resonates. It still leaves that indelible stamp on you of what Kiss was all about.
To this day, it's still a record that rock fans will go to. It's a classic rock live album.
I can't wait again. I don't care what you say.
Nearly three decades after the release of Alive, Kiss continues to stoke its primal fires on the road.
It's an event like a crazy circus. We truly bring the beast and the lunacy out of our fans, and they give it right back.
We pummel you, then we let you catch your breath, and then we spend the rest of the evening assaulting you until it's over.
Kiss's live sound is somewhere between the A-Train running express and the Concorde taking off. four guys are just unbelievably heavy.
Theatrically, they're amazing. They're probably the best there ever was and will be, because they give it their all on stage.
They definitely put their heart and soul into everything that they do. And they play real garage street urchin rock and roll. And I salute every greasy, flame-throwing, bloody tongue moment. You show us everything you've got. If you're not having fun with Kiss, you need to have your motor checked.
You wanted the best, you got the best. We really believe that. We're the hardest working damn guys in the business up there.
You know, we're the kings of the nighttime world.
Kiss Alive is a double-barreled monument to a band that dared to be different and refused to die. Alive broke all the rules and helped earn Kiss a spot on the pantheon of rock and roll immortality.
If there's a legacy to Alive, it's a story about how you and me can take on the world. Because Kiss, in retrospect, if you can sum it up, was never really concerned with good taste. The only thing we cared about was that we tasted good.
So good.
That's what Kiss has always been about. My way or the highway. You can succeed by doing it your way, by not listening to the people around you who tell you you can't or that you have to modify it.
Oh yeah. Everybody every day.
You people are awesome, and you have it within you to, in your own way, be Kiss.